Welcome to Activate Yourself with Geeta Sidhu-Rab, where we feature otherwise normal people who, because of events in their life, have turned left and done unusual, inspiring, incredible things, like build a business, become a happiness expert, marry a prince, create an empire, or like your host, set up a health and wellness business, Nosh Detox. Here's your host, Geeta Sidhu-Rab.
Hi, my name is Geeta Sidhu-Rab. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Activate Yourself. And today we have a very special episode for you. I think it was sponsored by my children. I can't tell you exactly, but I feel like my kids should have sponsored it if they wanted to sponsor it, because we're going to talk about parenting well. And I want to be one of those women when I grow up, I want to be one of those women because I am a fantastic parent. And preferably when my children are not in the same room. So I thought what I would do is, in keeping with having been a single parent my entire adult life and having children who say that they all have to be in therapy to recover whatever they're recovering from, I obviously had nothing to do with that. I thought Rose would come on and tell us from being a bad parent, how to be a good parent. It's a bit too late, but you know, hey, I'm like, something will come out of it. So Rose Clark from Love the Way You Parent, thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. Never too late, Geeta, never too late.
You see, that's my theory. And then I can ring them all and say, here's what I should have done. But that's fatal. If you show weakness, they come and get you.
Oh, no.
They do. So tell me about you.
Yeah. So I live in Canada with my husband and our two children, and I am an authorized language of listening parenting coach. So my own story comes from, you know, kind of growing up and knowing that I wanted my kids to have a different experience than I did. I just recognized I didn't really like the way that my parents treated me, and I didn't like the lack of connection, emotional connection I had with my parents. So before my husband even got married, I sat him down and I said, look, parenting is important to me. You know, kids are important to me. Here's my thoughts about parenting. I want my kids have... Thank you. I want my kids to have their own thoughts and feelings and opinions. They don't have to have all mine or yours, you know.
You're clearly not Indian. That's just wrong. Straight off the bat.
There you go. Yes. And I want them to have a close emotional attachment with both their parents. And he was fully on board. He's like, that sounds fantastic. That's exactly how I'd like things to be. It all was great until I had two under two and the yelling started. And I knew that.
Two.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I knew that something was really wrong, because I was treating my kids in the way that I never wanted to treat them. And I kept flip-flopping back and forth between trying to be uber patient and then just losing my crap on them every single day. And they were babies. So, you know, they were so young. And I was like, what's wrong? Because they'd be laying in bed at night and I'd be looking at them going like, oh my gosh, they're beautiful, sweet, perfect little angels. What do I have to yell at them all day? And my evenings were horrible. You know, once I got them in bed, I felt depressed. I felt
drained, depleted,
drained. Yeah, all those things, right? I couldn't.
And ashamed, actually. It's the guilt and the shame.
You got it. The guilt, the shame, the regret, all those things. And previous to getting pregnant, actually, right after I got married to my husband, I burned out at work. And my doctor said, okay, we can do meds, we can do therapy, or we can do both. And I said, let's start with the therapy.
Yeah.
So I sat down with the therapist and she said, why are you working so hard? Why are you working so many overtime hours, no overtime pay, all this stuff? And I said, well, and I was surprised by the answer that popped out of my mouth. I said, I'm just trying to prove that I'm worth the space I take up in the world. And she was like, okay, this is what we need to talk about, you know?
Ooh, so
she
started asking about sneak attack.
Yeah. We started talking about my childhood and she was like, whoa, you were severely abused. I had no idea it was abuse. Two-thirds of our population is. That's, pardon me?
Called being Indian. You will do this and you got to do this and don't come like this. And then people always, I would say that, when I'm making a speech, my opening line is always, my options growing up were doctor, lawyer, accountant, marriage, or death. And, you know, I was like, so I don't like blood, don't like numbers, bad at marriage, counting on death. I thought I'd go with the words.
Wow. Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine that feeling like that's your only choice.
No, but it was.
Well, okay. But okay. That's what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah,
that was what was created for you. These are your only choices. And since you didn't like any of them.
And so what would you count as abuse? Because if that's a standard immigrant kind of upbringing.
So spanking, any sort of physical abuse, mine was done quite excessively, you know, using what I would call a weapon, a stick. And the physical abuse, it was bad. It was terrible. It was the mental and the emotional abuse, though, I think that really, really stuck with me. And so that idea of not being able to have my own thoughts and feelings and opinions, that who I was never going to be good enough. And funny, because if you look at my family, like I come from a family of six kids, there are four boys and two girls. And when you look at my sister and I, our personalities are complete opposite. Like I was the perfect little Catholic girl, because I grew up in a Catholic family, so I did everything by the books, perfection. And my sister was 5 years younger, and she came to me at one point and she said, Rose, she said, I watched you trying to be the perfect girl, and it didn't work. It never worked. So she said, I decided that I was going to go after what I wanted anyways, because I was never going to get. And I thought, how smart, how wise yes. of her to yes. like, you know, choose to go after who she was and what she wanted, because she saw that my strategy was absolutely 100% not working, even though I was trying my very hardest to earn my parents' love, right? That was really what I was trying to prove that I was worth, you know, was what I was really looking for, was something that felt out of my reach my entire life, which was my parents' love and acceptance. And they just couldn't give it. They just felt like it wasn't safe to give it. It wasn't safe for a child to feel like they were good enough or loved, because then they would relax themselves and they would not try hard enough. They would not be successful and all those things. And now we learn from science and whatnot that actually focusing on the child's strengths, focusing on what they're doing right, is actually what draws people the best into.
Did you come from a good socioeconomic background or not?
Like, were you guys, pretty good?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I was going to say, because that happens so much. The drive somehow to push us to be better, to do more. Mm-hmm. I remember my eldest child had very, very bad food allergies, then anaphylaxis. And because his stomach didn't work, he had really bad brain fog and everything. And I remember he can't read, and he was six, and that's like five or six. And I had to sit next to him, and I would slap his hand every time to try and, you know, horrible. And I remember just thinking that, when he got older, when he was about 12 or 13, I remember thinking, I'm either going to have my child or I'm going to have his education, but I will never have both, because his brain just didn't work. And I could see him really trying. And there was this intelligent child in there that couldn't come out because he was exhausted permanently. And I remember just thinking that, and it was such an interesting learning experience for me, because it was pulling out a basic tenet of my upbringing and of what made me who I was, and having to throw that away. And I still look around, and my youngest is in fashion school. She's at the Fashion Institute. And I'm like, sweetie, can we just lie and say you're at law school or something? Let's just lie. I mean, like, just make me happy. Come on. I do not want any of them to go to law school. I do not want any of them to go to medical school. And I don't think they can add up. So we're not doing, well, actually, they can add up, but not for accounting. So it's not like I want, but do you know what I mean? There's still a part of my body that just goes, I don't know about that. Yeah. I feel like I should have done something as a parent. And then he went on when he was 22 and got a double honors. So he got 2 degrees in 2 years, in sort of a shortened period of time, in 24 months instead of in 3 years. And he got it in history and economics. And I was like, wow, who would have thunk it? Right.
Yeah.
But it was so interesting. I actually remember it being a very conscious thought that I had to choose.
Amazing that your brain was able to kind of look at those two things.
I was very lucky. It was such an extreme. Had it been even better hidden, I'd have missed it or fudged it or somehow gone, I need to do this. I'm thinking of your parents. You know, I would have thought, oh, no, that's look what happened. We did well. So it's the right thing to do kind of thing. And I knew all of that was not true. So then what did you do to change how you parented?
Yeah, well, I started doing what most moms today are doing. I started reading all the blog posts and buying all the books, you know, and hoping that something would work. And things would work a little bit, but they wouldn't really stick. And really what I was finding was so much of this. Well, first I started with attachment parenting, which was like, in a lot of ways, it was very beautiful because it allowed me to kind of undo some of the beliefs that I had, like, you know, you have to let the baby cry and babies are manipulative and all these thoughts. I was able to let all of that go and know that, like, when a baby cries, they're just expressing a need. That's the only time they cry. And that's, you know, we can respond to those needs. It's
even when they're
that.
Refusing to sleep and they're exhausted beyond measure.
Yeah.
And what's the need? I don't want to sleep. I need a cuddle.
No, of course they want to sleep. It's just that they are not able to in that moment, right? It's probably that they're desperate to sleep, right? But they're so overstimulated or whatever's going on, you know, that they just can't. And yes, you know, they need our support. And kids, you know, they always have challenges, whether it's they can't sleep or they want to know that they can, you know, get what they want in life, or, you know, they want to know that they're lovable, or
their lives,
all those things. Yeah, exactly. And so really, you know, giving them the life skills to allow them to get their needs met, but within our boundaries, within the parents' boundaries, you know, that's really, the boundaries are our job. The needs are the kids' jobs. In a sense, you know, when it comes to needs for growth, not when it comes to needs like eating and all those things, that's when our kids do need us to provide for them, for sure. Until, you know, until they get to a certain age. But yeah, so what happened, you know, what happened with me as I was, you know, reading all these blog posts and different things. And I stumbled on this lady, and the way that she spoke about her daughters, it floored me. Like, I was like, I want my brain to work that way. I want to have those kinds of thoughts about my kids. Because of course I was just living in this complete spiral of fear in my parenting. I mean, this is what's happened in our
society. Oh, and exhaustion. Two children on the age of two. You were knackered, babe.
Yes, I was. You're so right. Thank you. And so this is what's happening so much with us, is that, you know, we've been using in our society so much this reward and punishment parenting, or sometimes it's just been punishment, but this reward and punishment parenting. And what that does is it wires the child's brain, and my brain was wired this way, to make all my decisions based on fear. So even if we look at your situation where you're just like, can we just say that you're in law school, right? It's because there's this worry in there about what other people are going to think, right? Really, or even what you think about yourself.
We definitely say she's in fashion school.
Yes.
But even to have that thought. Absolutely had that moment.
Yeah. Right. And so this is, I think, what so many moms are struggling with, is we're struggling with kind of like where my authentic heart is in motherhood and trusting myself. You know, this is one of the things that I really want to instill in moms, is unconditional self-trust in themselves, and then they're going to naturally pass on unconditional self-trust to their kids. And then look out, world, when we have a bunch of authentic people running around, you know, then we're really going to be somewhere. Because when we're constantly making decisions out of fear, which is, again, like I said, what many of adults' brains are wired today, my brain was wired that way, basically making decisions, trying to prevent bad things from happening, trying to prevent the pain of punishment, right? Whether that punishment is physical, or whether it's the parents going to pull back their emotional closeness to the child, use the, you know, relationship as currency to try to get the child to do what the parent wants them to do. Now, all parents are doing the very best with what they have, and these things are so rooted in our society, but there's change coming. And so when I stumbled on this lady who spoke about her daughters in this very specific way, I started following, you know, her Facebook stuff and reading all her stuff. And then she mentioned,
Well, don't say that now. We're going to go for a break, and then you're going to tell us when we come back. It's a good place to go for a break. We're going to be back in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back. What did she say?
So she mentioned a lady. She said a friend of hers named Sandy Blackard. And immediately I went to Sandy's website. This lady I was following had actually taken Sandy's coaching program, and that was part of what was influencing the way her brain worked. I also think that her brain was very connected to her authentic self as well. So when I went to Sandy's website, I was floored. Like my jaw literally dropped because I remember having gone to my husband and saying, this motherhood thing for me is not working. I need tools. And I don't even know if the tools I want existed. When I got to Sandy's Language of Listening website, I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This model is all about building up the child and who they are, honoring their uniqueness, honoring their strengths, but also allowing the parent to hold boundaries. Because this is what was missing from a lot of the gentle parenting that I was learning. It was talking about be with the child, validate their feelings. That's great. But what happens when your child is hitting their sibling, or what happens when you have to get out the door on time? There was this lack of what
to do. Or even get some rest.
Or get some rest. And yes, bedtime is like a huge issue.
Yeah. And as a single parent, that was, I remember there was a lady who was a friend of her son was a friend of my child's, and he bit her. And she said, she was of course American, because with us, this was where it all came from. Right. And she said, no, darling, we don't do that. And then she had this long conversation about with this 2.5-year-old on why you don't bite. So my son looked at this and thought, I like this. So he bit me. So I bit him. And we never had any more biting. It just didn't happen again with any of the children, because he told the other ones, he's like, don't do it, she'll bite you back. And I remember. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that wasn't in a book somewhere. But anyway, carry on.
Well, but it is the way a lot of parents parent, simply because it seems to make sense logically, right? The child to know how it feels. Right. If you were to bite them back, they would know how it feels. And there are other ways to be very firm with your boundaries and not be, we don't do that, and be all gentle and calm and just, or that's not nice. That's one I hear a lot. That's not nice. We were at a farm the other day that was like kind of like a public farm where there was all kinds of fun stuff going on. And I don't know how many times I heard parents say to their kids, that's not nice. Stop doing that. And I was like,
and they're like,
okay,
I don't want to be nice.
Yeah. Who wants to be nice? Right. It's not very fun. Definitely. And it's not really a word that has a lot to it. Right. And so it's this idea of being, you know, a lot more direct with the child, and being the one in charge. Kids need us to have firm boundaries. That's what makes them feel safe. They actually feel safer.
I just need to ask you a question. I don't understand. So I look at the way I parented very consciously, because I didn't enjoy how I was parented. And so I was like, well, I don't know how to do this. And I'm a single parent. I'm the breadwinner. And there were three of them and there's one of me. So I'm going to consciously parent the opposite and live and hope that that's good enough. And there were places I won and there were places I really didn't win. But I have parents as friends who parented in so many different ways. Why are all our children in therapy? Ooh. Why are all our children struggling?
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, that could be for a number of different reasons, but I can speak to, for example, one. Well, there's maybe two things I'll speak to. One is that
all of them, obviously, like,
yeah, but those beliefs that we have about children, they get, I mean, it's rooted in our brains, right? Like our brain is wired a very specific way to understand children. And we learn a lot of that from the way that we're treated. And then we just learn a lot of that from the way other people in society talk about kids, you know? So for example, that phrase that babies are manipulative, and so many people believe that. What ends up happening is that either, you know, the mother thinks that she has a bad child. I mean, that's the first thing, right? They don't trust your child.
How is a baby manipulative? Which idiot came up with that? How does a baby know how to manipulate? A 2-year-old, now let's talk. But a baby?
Well, even a 2-year-old does not have the brain development to manipulate. But if we believe, if we run with that belief that babies or children are manipulative, then it automatically makes us adversaries with our children, right? We're already against them. They're already trying to trick us. And right? Yeah. And so that really does not help the mother have a close connection with her child, right? That does not help the child have a close connection with the mother. It does not help the mother feel like she can meet the child's needs or feel like she should meet the child's needs. And that's not to say that, you know, a mother can't ask for help to meet the child's needs, right? Like when we know that the child just has needs and they just have to get met, it doesn't have to depend on us. We can get help, you know, because it's kind of too big of a job. And I mean, my goodness, look at your situation. You're a single mom with 3 kids. Holy moly. When do you get your needs met, right?
Oh, I
mean,
I always had help.
So,
and it was
goodness.
Funny. No, I always had help. It's impossible. I tried it without, and it just
It is impossible.
It's absolutely impossible. And what I found, admittedly, I haven't bought really expensive clothing for my entire adult life either, but that's okay, because that was a good trade-off. But I remember consciously knowing that the children behaved better around the people that were helping me than they did around me. I found that was a really interesting thing.
Yeah. And if that could just be because you were their safe place. They always knew they could trust in your love.
That's what I thought it was.
Depended on it. Yeah. So if we were to take this belief, you know, that babies or children are manipulative, and we swap it out with one of the beliefs that comes from language of listening, this parenting model that I use, teach and love, it has four beliefs or four premises and three tools. So one of the beliefs is just kind of an overall belief. But then there's these three beliefs and the tools to practice the belief, which is so fantastic. So if we swap out babies are manipulative with the first premise from language of listening, which says, everything children do and say is communication, and they must continue to communicate until they are heard. If we look for what's going on underneath the surface, you know, and really, really start to see them from that point of view, and we don't take it personally, we don't take our children's behavior personally, because we've been taught to do that too, you know, they're just trying to communicate, usually a difficulty in meeting a need. That's typically what's going on with them. And the same is true for us too. We can use these premises when we look at ourselves, because a big part of my language of listening, learning and my success with it was learning that I can use the tools to reparent myself, to fill in the voids left over from my own childhood. Because I had, you know, all this unexpressed anger, all this unexpressed rage, all these many, many unshed tears, and they were just coming out all over the place, which is kind of what happens when we become parents. The challenges that we were not able to work out in our own childhoods, they start to come, they rise right to the surface. So sometimes I tell my clients when I'm working with them, you know, when they're really upset, when their child is crying, it's like everything inside of you gets kind of mixed up with, you know, what were the thoughts that you had about yourself crying as a child? Like, did your parents get angry at you when you cried? Were you shamed when you cried? Right? Was it dangerous to cry? Like, if your parents did get angry, did they punish you when you cried? You know, and so then you're like fearing for your child, like it's not safe for them to cry because it was never safe for you. Although it's perfectly safe for them to cry because you're not going to punish them. But your brain is still wired that way, right? Even the animal brain, we could say, is kind of wired that way. So it's this idea of starting to rewire the brain and look, you know, change the way that we look at children and understand children, and even look at and change the way that we look at ourselves, you know? So sometimes it's those beliefs still get stuck in our head.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to parenting. And so, I mean, kudos to every parent that's trying to change the way things that were done. You know, if things were not done well with them, because that's huge. That is no small feat to even make small changes. I'm very thankful for one change that my mother made, because this is an extremely painful thing for children. My grandmother used to give my mother the silent treatment.
Oh.
And, you know, I don't know how long it lasted for, but I have worked with women where the silent treatment would last for days or weeks. And the fear that comes on a three-year-old when their mother won't talk to them for days, like you just, I don't think there's even any words that you could use to explain that. What is happening inside their little bodies
and their nervous system. Oh, my stomach's clenching.
Right.
Oh,
right. Yeah. And so that was one thing that my mother told herself she would never do. I will never give my children the silent treatment, because she experienced that pain. And again, I don't even have words. So if anybody's listening, you know, and this is something that they experience, please know, please be validated that that was, you know, a very, very painful experience for you. And if there are mothers out there that are using this as a tactic, you know, this is not to shame them or blame them. It is to say, you know, let's help you find a different way to hold your boundaries, to get your kids to follow the rules, you know, because it is not an ideal situation. But a lot of moms who do it, it's simply because it was done to them. Right. And our brains will go right back to the default wiring. I still remember being in an elevator with my brother. He's 7 years older than me, so he had kids, you know, quite a bit sooner than I did. And we were in an elevator with, I think, maybe my preteen niece. And I'm thinking she was preteen at the time. And he said to her, you know, quit crying else I'll give you something to cry about. And we met eyes. And I said, you don't use that on your kids, because that's what my dad used to say to us. Right. And he burst out laughing. And then he handled the situation with her in a different way. But it's funny, because our brains will default, you know, back to, because parenting is so hard. Talk about being in the fight or flight stress response.
Right. That's what I wanted to talk about. Okay. Let's go for another break. And then I want to talk about this frigging parenting thing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And we're back from our break. I have a couple of my team that are currently going through the IVF process, and that is two more than I need because it's all about me. They are so struggling. It's so hard to watch. They are having to work so hard. And I, you know, and it's very funny because like one misspelled my name yesterday and I was like, yeah, I think we should just get my name spelling right. I'm like, I'm sorry to be difficult. And they're like, she's like, oh my God, what am I doing? And I was laughing so much because there's a place where I'm looking at all that and I'm like, you think this shit is hard. You need to wait till you got kids and then you're, you know, and I'm like, wow, you work so hard to have the baby. They come and then they won't stop crying for 2 years. And you're just like, what did I do? Right. I remember that because I remember a really good friend of mine had had like 7 miscarriages and her daughter, when she was 7, she was pulling pizzas. Okay. And we don't have the same fast food culture. Didn't have. And she was pulling pizza out of a fridge and putting it in an oven for her to eat. And I was like, you don't work. And you had 7 miscarriages. I mean, you know, hello, misjudgment here. And why? And you have one child and you are pulling pizza out of a freezer to give your child. And it was just traumatic for me. But then my daughter explains to me that the fact that I'm a health expert, right? So I run a health business. She says the fact that we've been eating healthy for 14 years has made us the weirdest kids in school. The weird. I was like, oh, oops. She's like, no, mama, nobody wanted to come to our birthday parties because you gave them carrots. And they were. I was like, shit, I was a hippie mom. So there was a place where if I had pulled out that pizza, it would have been a good thing to do. And I never, ever, we had everything made from scratch every single day. And my daughter was like, that was weird, like really peculiar. So you just can't win. Okay, so how are you meant to win a parenting? And I realize it's consciously a stupid question. But the thing about parenting, I always wanted children and I paid a high price in my career because I always wanted kids. Mm. And then I wanted them to be safe, imagine. So then I paid another price because we ended up with aspirin, and that's fine. All of those were choices. I don't have a problem with them. But it haunts me that there were better ways to do it. Then I have to remind myself, it's tiring. There are so many single mothers out there and they're tired. They're working. They're the only breadwinners. How do we help them? What is it that we can say to them with how to parent better?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of takes me back to this whole idea of, I really want to establish, help moms to establish in themselves an unconditional self-trust. And I'll share with you the quote from Language of Listening. It was part of my training. It was a recording that Sandy had done. And as soon as she said this phrase, these two sentences really, I burst into tears and I kept listening to it over and over and over again because it was exactly what I needed in my parenting. It was exactly what I needed for my childhood, but it was exactly what I needed in my life right then and there. And the quote goes like this. I hope I don't butcher it here, but here we go. Imagine not having to defend your intentions. The world is a much safer place around people who can see your true intentions. And I burst into tears because that's what I wanted. I wanted my parents to always trust my intentions because I was always trying to do the best.
Because you were trying so hard.
I was trying so hard. And instead I was getting punished over and over again for making mistakes or trying to get my needs met. You know, that sort of an idea. And so, I think when we can really just kind of come back to trusting in the human person, trusting in the goodness of everybody. So one of the premises from Language of Listening is a third premise. It says that it's just the first half of it, but it says that all behaviors are driven by three healthy needs: experience, connection, and power. All behavior.
Connection and power.
Yeah. All behavior is driven by those three healthy needs. That doesn't mean that you like all behavior. That doesn't mean you're okay with everything that your child does.
I need to stop there and think about that again. Okay. Yeah. So all connection is run by the desire for an experience, to have an experience or to create an experience.
So all behavior,
yeah,
is driven by those three healthy needs. So experience is all about, I've got this body, what can I do with it? What can I do with this life? How can I enjoy this life? Okay. So for example, during the pandemic, the way my kids started meeting their need for experience, because in Canada, especially in Nova Scotia where I was, we were not allowed to go to parks. We couldn't go to the library. School was shut down, all those things. So I started finding like shampoo smeared all over the bathroom wall and my jewelry and bits and pieces all over the house because my kids needed to explore. They needed to try new things, right? That was them meeting their need for experience. And my brain went, oh, okay. I don't like them meeting their need for experience that way. So I'm going to help them find ways to meet their need for experience that falls within my boundaries, ways that I'm okay with. So that's experience. Mm-hmm. Connection, pretty easy for everybody to, you know, think about, is just, you know, am I capable in relationships? Can I connect with other people? Sometimes it's a physical connection. Sometimes it's a conversation. You know, that kind of an idea, that's connection. Sometimes it's a connection with yourself even. And then power, which was the one that I really struggled with, because power just meant power over to me because of the childhood that I had, right? Complete control. That's not what meeting the need for power is. Meeting the need for power is feeling capable, feeling like you have something to offer.
Empowered.
Empowered, really. Yes. Yeah. So all behavior is driven by those three needs for growth. Okay. So that means you could always trust the intention. Needs just have to get met. That's just the way that that's just what it is to be human. We have needs for growth. They just have to be met. But again, it doesn't mean the parent likes the way the child is meeting the needs. It doesn't mean the child is meeting the needs in a socially or personally beneficial way. And then the parent guides them to meet the need in a way that's within the parent's boundaries. And the child has to like the new way too, because it has to actually feel satisfying for them. So the way we say it in Language of Listening is that the parent, you know, supports the child in problem solving to get their need met in a way that both the parent and the child like. So understanding that, coming from that place of intentions. How do you do
so
that?
Yes. I'm tired. I've worked a full day. I've got three kids. We're trying to get them to eat food.
Yeah.
Let's start with, you know, the core like trauma.
Yeah.
As a mother, and the child is like, I don't want to eat this.
Yeah.
And what do you
do? So when you're that exhausted and you're that strung out, the first thing you do is you look after yourself. That's the first thing you do.
You've got three kids. You said, what are you going
to
do?
But you can leave them for 5 minutes probably. Right. And so what I mean by looking after you is, I mean, get in the bathroom, close the door, look at yourself in the mirror, and use the first tool from Language of Listening called Say What You See, which is to validate. It's to connect. And you talk to yourself in the mirror like you're talking to somebody else. You use the word you, and you say, you're so freaking exhausted and those kids don't want to eat and you don't know what to do. And you are so done. You just want to walk away. Because once you start to validate yourself, anybody else, you're using this, say what you see, you remove all judgment. It's just what's going on. It's just how you feel. You say all the taboo things, right? You hate them. You never want to give them food again, whatever. It doesn't matter, because even those really terrible thoughts that you have or things that you say, it's just trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
Right. You don't actually hate your kids. You hate how frustrated you are. You hate how exhausted you are. Right. But you can say it's that you hate your kids. That's fine. Right. Because once all those things are not a problem, once it's not a problem that you have a problem, once you realize that your emotions, your feelings, your lack of being able to be superwoman and do a bajillion things that not even 10 people could do, because it's not realistic. Like you said, it's impossible to be a single mother who's a breadwinner to look after three kids. It is impossible. I think that's an important thing for people to hear too. I think probably some people are feeling, you know, a little relieved hearing that, yes, it's absolutely impossible, right? Once you know that you're not the problem, that allows you to go after what you want. You have some self-belief. You're able to go after what you want and come up with a solution to go after what you want that you like. You want the kids to eat. Your brain's much more clear once you've validated yourself and made sure that you knew that you're not the problem. If you're in the kitchen with your kids, right, and they don't want to eat, and all of a sudden, I'm a bad mother, I'm terrible at this, right? It's my fault, or I've got a bad kid, or all
eat it
thoughts.
Or I'll smack you.
Well, eat it or I'll smack you. Yeah. Yeah. But even
and
the thought behind where that is,
yeah,
then you feel like crap afterwards. Yeah, you really do. right? And then the kids like got weird feelings around eating food because they get smacked when it's time to eat or whatever, right? And so it's just that idea of like, it's okay. It's okay for you to get your needs met. Because once your needs are met, once anybody's needs are met, they're able to show up as their best self.
And then you That's go back your to best your child self and...
Yeah. And you let them know what they can do. You can just be like, here's what's for supper. You know, if you're hungry, you can eat it. You don't have to make them five different things and make it, you know, make it, you know, what I often hear, and I think it's great, you know, you choose what the child eats and they choose how much.
Got it.
Right? Because they'll eat when they're hungry. You know, you're not starving them. You're not taking it away from them and saying, well, you're not eating anything at all tomorrow if you don't eat this right now. Right? That's not what you're doing. That's right?
Just, yeah. Yeah. I tried that once with a child. And she sat in front of the same food for like 4 hours. I was like, okay, we're never doing that again. Cause that was so bad. Cause somebody once said, well, if they don't, cause I hated that. I always thought that was stupid. And they said, no, you should just try that once. And I remember trying it thinking, we're never doing that again. Cause that's dumb.
You didn't like it. Yeah.
No, I hated it.
Well, and as parents, I mean, you talked about being empowered. As parents, we feel so disempowered. Day after day after day, right? Like it is the hardest job in the world.
It
takes your emotions for a roller coaster.
Your unhappiest child. I've always clung to that saying because it's very true.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Well, that was amazing, Rose. It went very fast because it did go really fast. How do people get hold of you?
Yeah. So I'm most active on my Facebook group. So if they go to Facebook, they can search Love the Way You Parent. I've got a business page there too. You don't need to pay much attention to that. I'm not super active there. I'm in the group, you know, the community. There's free trainings in there. For example, how the crap from your childhood shows up in your parenting and what to do about it. I'm also active on Instagram. So you can find me at Love the Way You Parent with dots in between. And people can just go to my website, afteraces.com, afteraces.com. And if you want to learn more about my program, then you go to /Love the Way You Parent.
Love it. Thank you so much. That was, that was really fun. I think that we could have done this for a lot longer, but I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Kita.
And I don't feel like a worse parent, which is like just all the way around. That's a pretty good thing all around. I'll take that as a result.
Everybody's doing the very best that they can. There's no doubt that everybody's doing the very best.
But you're a very, I'll tell you one thing in this, you are a very good listener. You're a very active listener. And that's just lovely because there's a place where all the way through this conversation you and I have had, every time I am saying something, it's really interesting to see how your face changes and you completely listen with your whole body. Yeah. And then you answer. It's wonderful. It's really fantastic trait. I have to really appreciate that.
Oh, I just love that compliment. Thank you so much. That amazing. Feedback. Yeah.
So guys, if you want to get Rose to listen to you, you should get in touch. She does it really well. This is Gita Siddhu-Rob. That was all about parenting 101. And this is called Activate Yourself. I hope that was inspiring. I hope it was interesting. And I hope you've just given yourself a big pat on the shoulder for like just being a halfway decent parent. And the kids are there and they're fine and, you know, all that stuff. And I will be with you again soon.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our goal was to give you pause, make you think about your life, and inspire you to say, wow, what if I tried to do that? If they can do it, so can I. Did it work? Let us know by finding us on social media at Gita Siddhu Rob or at Nosh Detox. We upload new shows every 2 weeks here. And if you start to miss us, check us out on YouTube.